this issue going on in Venezuela and the Nobel Peace Prize. The Nobel Peace Prize is supposed to be the highest award given for those who are doing the best to seek peace, that they're trying to say, hey, we see all this violence going on and there's a better way. That's what it's supposed to be. As a matter of fact, let me just show you what it actually is physically, definitionally supposed to be. Here's what the Nobel Peace Prize is supposed to be all about.
In his will, he established this prestigious honor in 1901 to be awarded to those who have made the most significant contributions toward creating a better, more harmonious planet. The criteria for the Nobel Peace Prize, as outlined in Alfred Nobel's will, are both specific and profound. The prize is awarded to those who have done the most for and fraternity between nations, by fostering cooperation and resolving conflicts through dialogue, the abolition or reduction of standing armies, championing global disarmament efforts, and the holding and promotion of peace congresses, creating vital platforms for negotiation.
Okay, that's what Alfred Nobel wanted. That's what he set up this whole peace prize to be. And that's what it used to be probably a long time ago now. It used to actually be that. And over the last decade or so, maybe a couple of decades, I think it's become more political. And I think that it's more like the idea that people just say, hey, let's use the Nobel Peace Prize. I'm talking even about the Nobel Prize Committee themselves to try to give messages. That's not what it was supposed to be about. And unfortunately, that cheapens it. And so over a period of time, it's become a lot less important. It's become a lot less prestigious. And really, it's not even taken seriously by people. Now, however, I think because of the 2025 award, it is now probably or possibly in any way become irredeemably compromised. Now, I think it is more of just an outright joke. Here, first of all, is the announcement of the winner for 2025.
The Nobel Peace Prize for 2025 goes to a brave and committed champion of peace, to a woman who keeps the flame of democracy burning amidst a growing darkness. The Norwegian Nobel Committee has decided to award the Nobel Peace Prize for 2025 to Maria Corina Machado. She is receiving the Nobel Peace Prize for her tireless work promoting democratic rights for the people of Venezuela and for her struggle to achieve a just and peaceful transition from dictatorship to democracy.
So she is a champion of peace, so he says, as she has tireless work advancing democracy. First of all, there was nothing in the Nobel Peace announcement in the prize itself. It said anything about democracy. It said about getting rid of standing armies. It said finding dialogue. Those were the things that it talked about. He didn't even mention that. And then he says that, yes, this is a person who is moving to use peaceful process to move from dictatorship to democracy, right? You caught that. Now then, let's see, and I think it was just yesterday, the winner was asked, do you advocate the use of force and violence to achieve your peaceful transition?
Do you support U.S. military strikes on the territory of Venezuela as part of what you call a process?
I believe that the increase in pressure and the escalation that's taking place is the only way to force Maduro to understand that it's time to go.
The only way to force Maduro to understand that it's time to go. So because you don't like him, and this is, of course, an opposition political figure inside Venezuela, who was a very good friend of the United States and was very closely tied in, even with the vice president. And now then, when asked, you just got the Nobel Peace Prize, which talks about the disarmament. This talks about diminishing armies, using dialogue instead of violence. That's the literal definition of the award. And your first statement is, yeah, I'm for all of this military power that I just described to you just a minute ago about all of this aircraft carrier, the frigates, the destroyers, the missile carriers, all the airplanes with all of its lethal ordnance. And these Marines that are apparently ready to storm ashore somewhere. takes some kind of military action, kill people on the ground? That's your answer. That's our Nobel Peace Prize winner. Folks, that's not a Nobel Peace Prize. There's nothing peace about that at all. That is just another political opposition figure that wants to use violence to overthrow an existing government that they don't like. You can argue that he didn't win legitimately the election. Most in the West, maybe everybody in the West claims he didn't. There are others in the world, and certainly they do claim that, no, it was legitimate. It doesn't even matter. I don't know the answer. I don't know if it was legitimate or not. What I do know, however, is that is the government that is in place right now. I also know, and actually Mr. Barnes validated this on our show yesterday, from a legal perspective, that even if that is true, and who can say with any authority if it is, but even if it were, there is no legal authority that exists in international law, in any kind of national law in the United States, that says another government from another country, separate, can just say, I don't like the elections that you held, so I'm going to kill the guy that's sitting in the office of the president. It just doesn't exist. And now then you're talking about a revolution where you're an opposition figure and you want to rise up and kill the guy in charge or force him out by whatever means. And you're cool with using American military power to do that. Why wouldn't they? But this sounds really similar. If it sounds familiar to you, it should, because this is not too dissimilar to what the United States did in Libya in 2011. You may remember Hillary Clinton, then Secretary of State, infamously says, "We came, we saw, he died. Ha ha ha." And what a fun time that was. And how many people in Libya died as a result of this? So there was an opposition at the time. There was a resistance to Gaddafi. And we did support it with military power, the United States and a number of other countries, especially with air power, and helped knock down Gaddafi's ability to defend himself, and that he ends up getting just brutally slaughtered in the streets in the most horrific way. And to this day, there still are competing governments inside Libya. And they went on to well over a decade of effective civil war and all kinds of violence and disunity. And of course, that keeps the country from ever healing and moving on and becoming better and having a single government that can protect its people. Now we're sitting here potentially going to do the same thing here. And do we have to go back to Iran, 1953, when we unseated that one? With the CIA, we helped to overthrow the legally elected government? Or do I need to go to 2014 when we helped overthrow the legally elected government in Ukraine, Yanukovych, and then put in somebody that we wanted? And then that set the stage for a civil war in Ukraine for 8 years and the war we still suffer through today. How many times do we have to keep repeating the same thing and hoping for a different outcome every time? Now, I know many, like Lindsey Graham, wants to say, hey, well, it worked for Noriega to get him. It worked in Panama. It worked for George Bush. It worked for Ronald Reagan. Sure, they violated the law. Sure, they violated the Constitution, but it was a little thing, and it was in and out. It was over quick, bam, done. This is not Panama. This is not that situation here. The conditions are quite, quite different here. And you're not going to go, number one, you don't have the element of surprise at all. And you don't have the overwhelming firepower. A lot of the conditions don't exist there. Just militarily, it's not the same situation. More likely, you're going to get something like you did in Libya. But even aside from how it physically works out, understand this, folks. The United States achieved great power status, obviously because of its economic and military power that it had, but also because of the power of its morality, even. Now, I know a lot of people just rolled their eyes when I said that because they're thinking, you know, the U.S. has always been an imperial power and they've done a lot of bad things. Believe me, I'm aware of that. But there have also been considerable period of times where we actually did the right thing, at least to a degree. Now then, the degree is vanishing. Now then, we're not even pretending to be a country governed by the rule of law. We have said for a couple of decades, you know, the rules-based international order. The United States is the indispensable nation, et cetera, a nation for good. That used to be the tagline of the Navy, a force for good. That's what we used to say. that was never fully true for many of the reasons I just outlined here. But now, folks, we're getting into a position where we're not even going to pretend. And when you put off even the pretense of following the rule of law, you adopt a more and more dangerous situation to where I'm not going to be constrained by any laws. And that is where you get the seeds start germinating for authoritarianism. Now, a lot of people think, well, that can't happen in America. We've got 250 years. We're about to celebrate our 250th year. Can't happen here. Yeah, we can have some problems here and there, and we push the envelopes, et cetera, but that doesn't happen in our country. This is not like North Korea or the Soviet Union or something like that, or you know, communist China. Not like Cuba, right? But that's how these things start, friends. That's exactly how they start. Now we're not just starting, we're moving beyond start. The seeds are germinating. And just power and people being what they are throughout millennia of human history, when they get power and when they find out that there's no consequence for violating the law, they just keep going and accelerating. This, we got to get this caught. This is not just a matter of how Trump is going to operate politically the remainder of his term, depending on how this goes out. This is a much bigger issue, because this is not just a Republican issue. This is an American issue, because these seeds have been planted by both Republicans and Democrats. I mean, you can go back to, I mean, really, even before, you can go back to George Bush, the 41st president, and you can go to Clinton, you can go to Bush 43, you go to Obama, you can go to Trump, the first one, definitely Biden, and now then here Trump the second term, and you see it continues to accelerate, it continues to deepen, it continues to move in more dangerous territory. We dare not keep these seeds going. It is time to kill this at the root, pull them up, poison the rest of those seeds, and get it stopped while we still can. Because there could come a day when even me making a video like this could get me in trouble, could get me arrested. I don't know. But that's where we're heading, folks. We need to take action now to make sure we never get to that point. And one of the best things we can do right now is to stop this madness going into Venezuela to use lethal military power when it's not needed or legal. That's where we are. Appreciate you guys, folks. Look forward to seeing you next week. We're going to have some great shows for you next week. And of course, anything happens with this Venezuela situation or anything breaks in Pokrovsk or Kupiansk, you can count on Daniel Davis Deep Dive to give you the update. We are unintimidated and uncompromising. We'll continue to bring you the truth and the realities that you need to make sense of your world around you. Thanks, folks. And we'll see you next week on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.